Coming up on Golf Today, stop the fight. It's over, over. Jin Young Ko was perfect this weekend. Flawless, unblemished, unbeatable. Green after green in regulation, birdie after birdie. We praise the 26-year-old, and we gasp at some of the stats from her run to close out 2021. Plus, for a long time on Sunday in Dubai, it looked like another winning stroll up the 18th for Rory McIlroy until the next great winner in pro golf made birdie on 5 of his last 7 holes and stole the DP World Tour Championship and the race to Dubai. It's not just the wins, it's how Colin Morikawa is doing it live on world number 2. And unless you're talking to a volleyball on an island and your beard is totally out of hand, you've seen the social media post that broke the golf world a day ago. Tiger Woods, a golf club, a bucket of balls, a single golf swing, and billions of impressions. We react to Mr. Woods' back painting on his canvas. Let's go.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Welcome to Golf Today on a Monday. Dane Mnack alongside Shane Bacon. All I asked for, Shane, was a little rivalry. Two of the best players in the world in the final group together on Sunday in Naples. That's what we got.
You got it. That's what you wanted. And this all happening with kind of social media buzz around Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods. But even Tiger Woods, even Tiger with the post yesterday, would want us to start with the LPGA and what we saw over the last few weeks from Jin Young Ko.
You see that final round of 63, Shane. She got better and better every day. 69, 67, 66, and 63.
63, bogey free. I mean, she did everything you'd wanted in a week. 7 straight birdies, had 2 bogey free rounds. We're going to talk about the green and regulation run she went on that final round 63, and now winning 5 times on the LPGA Tour in a season. And you see, joining an elite list there.
Yeah, she's writing a lot of history in her young life. Let's hear from the champ.
Not only do you win the CME Group Tour Championship, you also earned the Rolex Player of the Year Award. What does that mean to you?
Well, Nelly played really well. Nelly has great year, even gold medal and a major tournament, major win, and 3 more wins this year. And I feel a little sad to Nelly, but I was a little lucky than her, so I got the Play of the Year this year. And I got Play of the Year two years, like even 2 years ago, 2019 and this year. So it's a really great honor to get Play of the Year.
Would talk about how your grandmother used to call you after rounds. What do you think she'd say to you if she were able to call you tonight?
I think she will be crying, I think. And I think she said, yeah, your putter was good.
Incredible combination of humility and greatness with this young player, Jin Young Ko. This from our own Amy Rogers, saying Jin Young Ko was motivated this season to win for her grandmother, who passed away in March, and hoped she was looking on from heaven as she poses with the Player of the Year trophy after winning for the 5th time this year. A rainbow appeared over Tiburon Golf Club.
It was the end of the season you would dream of from Jin Young Ko. And how about her season in general? Won 5 of her final 9 events, 3 of her last 4, 76 under par in her final 4 events of the season. Posted record-tying 14 consecutive rounds in the 60s and shot in the 60s in 25 of her last 26 rounds a season. You read these types of numbers, D, and it's almost hard to fathom that someone could go out and do this type of stuff.
But she's the one that seems to be doing it over and over again, whether it's bogey-free for 114 holes in 2019 or these rounds in the 60s, 25 of 26 rounds in the 60s, or hitting 63 consecutive greens in a row. And I'm laughing as I say it because it's so hard to do, but these are the numbers that she's putting up. And it's remarkable that the tougher the golf course, the tougher the competition, doesn't matter who she's playing with, doesn't matter what's at stake, she's able to bring her best. And I can't imagine how suffocating it must be to be a great player in your own right, to know that Jin Young Ko is not going to miss any greens, is not going to make many mistakes at all. It's got to be suffocating for the opponent.
She hit 67 of 72 greens this week in regulation. 93% of the greens she hit in regulation. She hit her last 63 greens in regulation. That's the number I'm really focused on today, because you just dive into that. That's 14 par threes during that stretch. She hit all of those. She hit them all off the tee. Never had a bad swing on a par three. 35 par fours. Never hit a tee shot next to a tree or in a bad angle where you have to pitch out and can't take on the flag stick. When I look at these numbers, to me, it screams incredible discipline. I mean, you have to be so disciplined to follow the game plan that you laid out for the week. This is not chasing a flag that maybe you don't feel comfortable chasing after. This is not kind of taking on a number you don't like. I think about Tiger at Hoylake, and I bring up Tiger at Hoylake a lot. Kind of, to me, it is the script of someone that really followed their game plan. I think about Zach Johnson when he won at Augusta National, kind of following the game plan to the par fives. For Jin-Young Ko, it was discipline and a game plan where I am not going to ever do anything I'm not totally comfortable with, and I understand that if I don't make mistakes, nobody's catching me. If I don't hit one bad shot with an iron, nobody's catching me. And to be able to convince yourself of this before the round and the week even starts, it is as cool of a thing as I've seen this year in golf, is being able to finish off a run like this with these types of stats. I mean, this is the best player in golf right now, and it's really not even close, Dave. Yeah,
and to do so at a season ender where the stakes are so high and all the awards are coming to fruition, it was so wonderful to hear the Hall of Famer Judy Rankin say that there was a palpable buzz around the golf course on Sunday morning, and the players were arriving for this big day. And this is not the only time that Jin-Young Ko has done this. It almost had me seeing double when you consider what she did last year as well. A very similar vibe. You'll recall last year, two players in the world, the top two, Jin-Young Ko, Se-Young Kim, in the final round together. Se-Young had won the Pelican. What happens at Naples? Jin-Young Ko wins that showdown in the finale. This year, very similar. Top two players in the world, Nelly and Jin-Young Ko, face off in the final round. Nelly had won the Pelican. Jin-Young Ko wins the showdown in the finale. Doesn't matter who she's grouped with, paired with, or the stakes, for her to be able to rise to the occasion and kind of, I won't say mute Nelly Korda, but to kind of silence her a little bit and say, I am the player. We've asked for the rivalry, putting these players head-to-head. Not really a rivalry until we see them on a Sunday in a big spot for the big stakes. And for her to play a flawless, beautiful round of golf with all of that on the line, player of the year, season ender, tells me this is a career that's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
She made par on the first hole on Saturday as a par five, and she made seven straight birdies after that. And then she parred her way in, made par on the last nine holes. And then she gets to Sunday, and she birdies half the holes and shoots 63 to slam the door. And again, I think it's worth praising the LPGA and women's golf in general, because this is a rivalry we've hoped for. We have a young American superstar in Nelly, and we have the rivalry with a great player, as we're seeing here, in the South Korean-obsessed golf country with Jin-Young Ko. And not to mention Lydia Ko is back as well. And we have a couple of amateurs in Rose Zhang and Rachel Heck that look like they're going to be world beaters when they decide to turn professional. I mean, how can you be in a better position than with this right now? The blueprint set right now for 2022 and beyond for women's golf is as good as you could hope for. I mean, it's not just as good as you could get.
Yeah.
It's as good as you could hope for going forward.
Massive respect between the two players is also Nelly saying, hey, I got to watch the Jin-Young Ko show, and Jin-Young Ko saying, you know what, hey, I feel a little bad about it. Nelly won the Olympic gold medal, became world number one, won her first major championship. So much humility and respect between these two players who I think are lifting the LPGA to extremely high heights.
It's always nice when you play like a Mr. Tiger Woods when you're Jin-Young Ko. When people start to say you're looking a little like Tiger with the way she goes about her business. Of course, on Sunday, everybody's seen it at this point. Tiger Woods going on social media and posting a simple one golf swing video, D. And then the golf world, as it should, freaks out.
Yeah, Rory broke his shirt and Tiger broke Twitter.
That's right. And Instagram. And everything. And potentially the internet.
Absolutely. How about some social media metrics? As of 11 a.m. Eastern time, 6.9 million views on Twitter, 3.2 million on Instagram. And I imagine those numbers, Shane, are still growing.
Yeah, I mean, this is not to mention that every account in golf has posted this video. Every golf fan has posted this video. So many of my friends that aren't really golfers posted on their story. I mean, this is going to be one of the leading posts across all athletes' social media in 2021. And listen, Tiger and his team are smart and they're strategic. And I think about kind of video leaking last week of Tiger limping, and that video was seen by so many people. Tiger answered with this golf swing. And you and I talked about it this morning. There were divots there. He'd been hitting a few balls. There's a bucket of golf balls there. There were more swings to be had. I don't know what we were thinking earlier this year when the news came out about Tiger Woods, but to get this around Thanksgiving, all I can say is we are thankful. We're thankful that he's healthy enough to be able to post videos like that.
It's a shot of B12 for the industry, and it's the fact that it's not a cameraman hanging from a tree from 200 yards away. This is Tiger Woods in his camp posting that video. So that's purposeful. I don't think it's a pit play either. I think it's the fact that we saw 2 weeks ago when Justin Thomas had that interview with No Laying Up that Justin said he's going to try to do this. And I think that's what that video is showing. Maybe a little something for us to chew on, to think about over our Thanksgiving turkey, over our winter holiday opening presents and the what like. I mean, what intrigue do we have? Does it mean PNC? Does it mean Augusta? Does it mean Bay Hill? Who knows what it means? He's healthy, obviously. Seeing him hit a golf shot, seeing Tiger with clubs in his hands, it's like seeing Itzhak Perlman playing violin or Yo-Yo Ma with a cello. It makes us all feel good.
Any athlete that comes back from injury that's kind of otherworldly, I mean, you think about a Kevin Durant or a Steph Curry, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady. I mean, these types of athletes that can come back from injury and we get to see them back doing their craft. I mean, that's what you hope for as a sports fan. And we are both golf fans first and foremost. We are obsessed with this sport, probably more than people at home even understand and know. And to see this again, I mean, it's just joy, it's happiness. Tiger is very, very happy when he's out on the golf course. Tiger is happy when he's competitive. And, Ty, we knew this road would eventually maybe get back to him on the golf course. I don't know if we think it was maybe this fast.
Yeah.
That's what's so crazy about this. But Tiger swinging again makes everybody smile. And it wasn't just us talking about this. I mean, you on social media, all the heavy hitters jumping on Twitter. Phil Mickelson said, I'm hanging in Montana. Great to see Tiger swinging a golf club again. I know he can't stand me holding a single record. So I'm guessing he wants to be the oldest to ever win a major. I'll just say this, bring it for Mr. Mickelson.
How about one of Tiger's proteges and young Bryson? It's great to see Tiger Woods swinging a club again. Can't wait for his comeback. So, hey, I mean, it sounds like it's on.
Be careful what you hope for there, Mr. Bryson. Christina Kim saying what we all thought in our heads. Oh, my gosh, 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 just about a trillion times.
Yeah, and how about Max Homa, great friend of the program. I wonder if Tiger and his crew laugh right before they post a swing video, knowing the entire free world is about to lose their damn minds. Hashtag golf, and he is correct.
He is correct. Tony Finau kind of saying what we were all thinking. Just like that, the Player Impact Program, the PIP number one spot is taken. Great to see the big cat back swinging the sticks. And D, our social question asking for some reaction.
Yeah, you know, I like the GIFs. I wanted to bring the GIFs back into play on golf today. So use a GIF to describe your reaction to Tiger's swing video. Best responses will be featured on the show. I wonder if Cruising with MJ has already sent in a response.
Listen, we are going to dive deep into this tomorrow. We're going to talk about future and look ahead and all that stuff. So tune in for a bit of a Tiger Tuesday golf today.
Can't wait. Still to come up with the reigning Open champ. Colin Morikawa added another accolade to his already standout season when he made history in Dubai on Sunday. And yes, we mentioned Rory and the broken shirt. There it is. Took out his frustrations after falling short. We react to his passion when Golf Today returns.
We can talk a lot about Colin Morikawa and the iron play and the talent, but he's teaching us that he's a winner and he finds ways to win on Sunday. You look at what Jin Young Ko did when the pressure mounted. You look at what Colin Morikawa did on Sunday with so many big names around the league.
Yeah, I started last week saying I thought he was the most underrated player in the game of golf. A little, you know, levity about the fact he was given the honorary membership of the European Tour and he goes out and wins one of the most important events on said European Tour. First player to win the tournament in his debut in multiple majors, first American to win the Race to Dubai, first player to win his first two major titles in eight or fewer starts, and second player to win the Open and PGA before the age 25. And you know what? What does Colin want to do next? How about win a lot more?
Win more. It's not an encore. It's not a swan song. Good, you know, farewell to what I'm doing in 2021. You know, I'm going to set my goals high. I always have. I'm going to set, you know, the bar as high as I can get and keep going. You know, I'm still not number one in the world. I still have a lot to work on my game. You know, obviously this week was good. I still thought I wasn't playing amazing, but I made do. You know, I was able to make some putts here and there, hit some great chip shots, made up and down, and made some crucial par saves out here, and that's what you need, you know. So I still think there's a ton of work on, and that's just kind of the nature of how my mind works and how I work is that I just want more. You know, I know I'm going to enjoy this one a lot, especially since it's at the end of the year. But there's a lot more, you know, a lot more for me, hopefully.
And, Dee, you mentioned the underratedness of Colin Morikawa. I mean, this guy's ranked number two in the world But I don't think we give him enough praise. We don't give him enough attention. Why did you say last week that you feel like he's so underrated?
Because maybe he doesn't have the big, long tee off of the game. You know, we talk about the John Rahms of the world, the Brooks Koepkas, the Brysons. It's not an explosive game. Colin Morikawa wins with his iron play, but he also wins, I think, with his game management, which is kind of an intangible. It's not something that you necessarily put a stat to. I also think because he goes about his business in kind of an under-the-radar way. He doesn't scream. He doesn't shout. But you've noticed something about who he's beaten in terms of the quality of player, that it's not just that he's winning. It's the way that he's going about his wins and, most importantly, who he's beating.
I mean, 5 of 6 of his PGA Tour victories to this point are all come from behind over the final round. His first victory, Barracuda in 2019. He played his last 13 holes in 7 under par. Didn't make a bogey on Sunday. He was trailing Troy Merritt in that event. And then you get to the 2020 Workday, closing 66. Justin Thomas was leading that. 3 back was Colin Morikawa going into that. Talk about concession. 54-hole leader was Colin Morikawa, but he had Koepka and Horschel kind of floating right around him. You go to the major championships, 2020 PGA. Dustin Johnson was the leader. Colin Morikawa, 2 back, tied with Brooks Koepka. In the Open Championship, it was Lou Oosthuizen who was leading Colin Morikawa, was 1 back. And, of course, on Sunday, it was Rory McIlroy. I mean, you're talking about Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Lou Oosthuizen, Dustin Johnson, and then floating around these leads is Jordan Spieth and Brooks Koepka. And then it all ends up falling on the shoulders of Colin Morikawa. I think what we are learning is that if you are an elite iron player, elite, I mean, I'm talking top 5 level iron player, from Jin-Young Ko to Colin Morikawa, it's such a hard talent to overcome if everything is not locked in. For Rory McIlroy, I mean, we could talk about the flag stick at the 15th, but he wasn't making the birdies he'd made those first 3 rounds. And when you're not making them, Colin Morikawa is inevitably going to give himself, what, 8 to 10, 5 to 12 footers each and every round just because of the iron play.
Yeah, what impressed me the most besides his play was what he said there in that interview. It wasn't like, hey, I'm going to take the offseason and enjoy it. I'm going to take tonight and enjoy this win. It's like, win more. I want to win more. And he said the same thing at Torrey Pines, where we had a great week at the U.S. Open. And I said, what's it like having that major, you know, winning it already, the PGA Championship? He goes, oh, well, now it's time to win a second major. And he did that the very next major at the Open. He wants big titles. He's a big game hunter. WGCs, majors, you name it. He goes across the pond and wins one of the most important events on the European Tour after being named an honorary member. He's 24 years of age, and it all looks so easy to him. He's just very, very steady. We don't see him get too high. We don't see him get too low. He doesn't bomb the ball in this era where distance is such at a premium, and it's so important the way the tour sets up golf courses in general. And we see who won the majors, and you see that the length is such an important aspect. Colin is not short, but his iron play is so superior, that's how he gets the job done.
Colin Morikawa is an incredibly smart young man, but I think he's a really aware young man. When you look at kind of the superstars in professional golf right now, especially on the male side of things, as of late, there's been that window. And that window's happened a lot in the early 20s. You think about Rory McIlroy back from 2012 to 2014, kind of picking off all the big wins in a row. You think about Jordan Spieth in 2014, 2015, into 2016. That was kind of his window. Brooks Koepka, maybe the window took a little longer for him to find, but he had it. He had a 2- and 3-year run where he was winning a whole bunch. And the window can go away so many more players are coming up that are young and hungry and trying to do what you've already done. For Colin Morikawa right now, this is the window. Yeah. This is the window to go out and pick up the victories. And I feel like he very much understands that, and he's kind of following protocol. I don't need rest. I don't need time away. All I'm trying to do is win as much as I can right now, because it might be a lot harder for me to do this in 4 and 5 years.
Rory stopped winning majors. Hasn't won since 2014. JT's lone major, 2017. You know, Jordan Spieth's last major, 2017 as well. You never know when that window is going to close, but right now it looks like it's wide open for Colin Morikawa.
So easy for Colin Morikawa. And what was so interesting was how easy it looked for Rory McIlroy through 3 rounds, coming off the win in Vegas. And it really, to me, D, you see the bad break again here at the 15th. It looked like, to me, Rory McIlroy understanding I'm in this groove. I'm finally in this groove of who I used to be. And that is such a bad break. That's landing past the flagstick and spinning back to, what, 5 or 8 feet. Yeah. And now all of a sudden you have an impossible up and down.
Yeah, and he was hot. Obviously, clearly he didn't recover. He bogeyed 15, he bogeyed 16, and then he bogeyed the par 5 finisher, where he's had some great moments throughout his career. And then afterwards, you could see that he was hot. Obviously, we don't know when this happened. This is obviously from social media, the picture of his shirt. I don't think that's a design, a flourish from Nike. A
couple of years away from that.
Tore his shirt clearly in anger, disgusted with how that golf tournament finished.
Yeah, Justin Thomas jumping on social media. He sent this out. I loved this from JT. He said, I love it. Rory McIlroy works his butt off and expects highly of himself and is frustrated when it doesn't go well. Never treats people with disrespect. Never makes a fool of himself. Just plays with fire and passion. Why is he as successful as he is? And one of my favorites. And D, this is my point, is reputation. Reputation matters so much when you do something slightly out of character. And this is slightly out of character. We've seen Rory McIlroy fired up on the golf course before. Remember chunking the iron in the water there at the route? We've seen fired up Rory. Charles Barkley said once during one of the matches, he said, I don't trust anybody that doesn't get mad on the golf course. And I agree. I agree with that sentiment, especially when you're trying to be one of the best golfers in the world. This was gutting for Rory.
Yeah.
That break on 15 was gutting for Rory McIlroy, because again, this felt like he finally found it, didn't it? It felt like he was finally in that place that he's been searching for the last 3 and 4 years.
And I don't want to see players like throwing clubs and destroying property, but this is another example of how much Rory cares, how much he wants to get back to being the player that he believes and so many of us in the golf world believes he belongs, which is being a number one player in the world, being someone who consistently wins golf tournaments, who has the full trust and belief in his game, and go back and start that major championship clock that for a while seemed like it would never stop. So to me, this is just one more great storyline of a player who has shown us so much color over the last few months. And I mean his tears at the Ryder Cup, and I mean his joy in winning in Las Vegas, and now his frustration in the Middle East. I want to see all of that from Rory. It almost kind of fits this storyline of this player. We're kind of waiting to see what will he do next. Will he get back to being the player he wants to be? I'm glad that the frustration was there. He was clearly gutted by the bad break at 15.
You know what's not a lot of fun for anybody? Losing. Losing is not fun for anybody. Losing can be frustrating, especially when you feel like you're in control. Now, there are times you get beat, and I feel like he got beat. I mean, even without the bad break on 15, it felt like Colin Morikawa's Sunday. And birdies 5 of his last 7 holes, and Colin Morikawa in complete control. But for Rory, I mean, you should be frustrated.
Yeah.
You should be frustrated when you feel like you have this tournament in your hands, when you understand this golf course. You know, you go back to the double bogey on Friday, and we talked about, or on Thursday, and we talked about the 7 there for Rory McIlroy. We discussed it. What's going to happen on Sunday when he's close to the lead? There's still a little bit to clean up with Rory McIlroy's golf game. But I do feel like a lot of the frustration poured over from Rory feeling like going into the final round that I'm kind of back to where I wanted to be with my golf game. And there are going to be a couple times we get kicked in the stomach. I mean, it's going to happen for Rory. This isn't going to be the last time. And I think a lot of people touched on the passion part. I just, to me, again, I think Rory McIlroy is in a place where I feel like I should win, and when I don't, I'm going to be frustrated at myself.
The place where he should be. It's where he was when he threw that club at Doral. It's where he was when he slammed on top of the bunker at Honda. That's when he was back at the height of his power, when he was one of the one or two best players in the world. And that display of tearing the shirt tells me that he believes if he's not right there, he's very, very close to being back to where he believes he should be, let alone what we believe.
There are a lot of names that we could throw on a list of who we would love to see in a final pairing at a major championship. And we were asking for Nelly versus Jin Young Ko. I'll tell you this, D, kind of looking at 2022, I would love to see Rory and Colin Morikawa. You talk about a stripe show on Sunday at Augusta or in Tulsa or wherever, at St. Andrews. I mean, could you ask for two better ball strikers to be thrown in a final pairing? Rory is kind of looking at Colin Morikawa going, I used to be like that.
Yeah.
I used to have no fear with the golf game, and I guarantee he's trying to inch closer and closer to a guy that was just a couple years ago looking up at Rory, hoping one day I can be like you.
All I've asked from Rory is throw your weight around a little bit. Make your voice be heard. I think we're getting closer and closer to being Rory, being back to where he wants to be. All right, folks, much more coming up on this Monday edition of Golf Today. Catching up with Scott Langley. He plans to step away from professional golf, more on his journey from the first tee to the PGA Tour when Golf Today returns.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And the Symetra Tour, road to the LPGA. And the RTX Zipcore Wedge from Cleveland Golf, it's what's inside. And by Skechers. Be comfortable with Skechers Go Golf Pivot Footwear worn by Brooke Henderson.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Scott Langley's story is an inspiring one to young golfers everywhere. Growing up in the suburbs of St. Louis, he's the first tee participant to make it all the way to the PGA Tour.
Look at his career highlights. Won 2010 NCAA Division I individual championship, finished in a tie for 16th at the 2010 U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, tied for low amateur. Finishing a tie for 17th at final PGA Tour Q School in 2012. That would earn him his card. And won on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2018, two career top threes on the PGA Tour as well.
And last week he announced his retirement from professional golf, saying in part, "I was never one of those kids who growing up hit every six-footer with the dream in my head of that putt winning the Masters or the U.S. Open, etc. All I ever wanted to do was play on the tour. After a 10-year career in pro golf, including five seasons on the PGA Tour, I'm grateful to say that I lived out that dream."
And Scott joins us now. And Scott, it's Thanksgiving week, so I wanted to give you the floor after that beautiful post you wrote to say what you're thankful for in terms of golf.
Well, thank you, you guys. It's great to be with you. You know, I tried to capture all my gratitude in that note, but honestly, I felt like if I made it any longer, people might not read it in the first place. So, you know, there's probably some people I missed, or you know, some organizations I might have missed, but I just have so much gratitude for my career, and it's been such a special experience to, you know, compete as a pro golfer and play, you know, on the world stage, and to spend, you know, a material amount of time on the PGA Tour and on the Korn Ferry Tour, and you know, to have some success. I you know, when I think back about my career, I didn't accomplish every single one of my goals, but I accomplished many of them. And, you know, the truth is it was never just about me. You know, it's certainly my work and my dedication that was the foundation of it, but I had so many special people in my life that have helped me, you know, accomplish what I have in golf. And I just have a lot to be thankful for. And, you know, I'm not, you know, incredibly active on social media, but, you know, when I thought about, you know, this transition into my chapter two, I just felt really compelled to say thank you in a meaningful way. And so that's where my letter kind of came up. I put a lot of thought into it, and, you know, wanted to make it really special, and wanted it to land on people in such a way where, you know, they could kind of understand who I am and where I'm coming from and how grateful I am. And it's been really special and nice to get such great feedback over the last week, and very cool.
What have you heard, Scott? Because social media is a lot of punching and flame throwing. You're using words like gratitude and blessed and thankful. What has been the response?
The response has been great. Yeah, you know, social media can be a little bit of everything. But certainly with this, it's been very positive. I've gotten, you know, it's kind of ignited some personal notes from people away from social media that's been really special to me. And also some comments from, you know, some of my peers on the tour. You know, it's just, you know, looking through the other day, and I saw that Tony Finau put out a little something, and, you know, I laughed. Tony wrote the nicest note, and it just really meant a lot to me. I've known Tony for a long time, all the way back to our junior golf days. And, you know, I was reading the comments, and one of the comments, you know, is very simple. It just goes, "Hey, Tony, he didn't die." So, you know, social media can be a little bit of everything, but it's been overwhelmingly positive with this experience and this letter that I put out.
Well, Scott, this game can get in your blood. As you know, it becomes a part of you, a part of who you are. How did you know it was time to say goodbye to professional golf?
Well, it was a really tough decision. Certainly, I love the game and I love to compete, and I don't think those two things will ever change. You know, I have a young family. I've been married for 8 years to my wife, Christy, and we have two daughters, Kennedy and Edith. Kennedy is 7 and Edith just actually turns 1 today. And, you know, I think what I realized was I want my family life to look a certain way going forward. And as much as I love professional golf, 200 nights a year on the road just doesn't cut it for the family life that I want going forward. It's just such a privilege to be a husband and a dad, and I'm really excited to step into that and you know, be home a lot more and be with them and, you know, take much more of an active role in raising the girls and, you know, being a partner to my wife, you know, here in person. So, you know, that's where my decision kind of began, you know, and then it moved on to, you know, a real passion that I have for my next career, which I'm really excited about.
What is that going to be?
Yeah, so I accepted a position at a company called Camden Capital, and Camden is a multifamily office investment advisor firm serving national private clientele. And, you know, it's an area of the world that I'm really interested in. You know, when I was thinking about what I wanted to do next, I was very fortunate. I've just been surrounded by so many really wise people, experienced business people, you know, through golf. A lot of people that really helped me with this decision were friends of mine that I've made through golf and through tournaments like the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, some of my partners that I've played with in that tournament. And so, you know, when I started to go through this process, I picked the brains of a lot of the people in my life, you know, and started to try and, you know, think through what am I intellectually curious about? What am I interested in? And how can I serve others and serve my friends in a really important part of life? And so, you know, what came out of that process was this decision to step into this business. And I'm just really excited about it.
Well, being the first tee participant on the PGA Tour is a pretty cool distinction as well. What was the organization's greatest benefit to you?
Well, it's been such an honor, you know, to carry that flag and one that I'll always carry with me. The first tee is so special and made such a big impact on me. You know, the thing I think is cool about the first tee is, you know, the junior golfers, the kids that go to the first tee, you know, I think the kids honestly are more interested in the golf and the social aspect. You know, a 12-year-old kid, he just wants to have fun with his friends. You know, he's not thinking about life or values or any of those things. But the cool thing about the first tee and what it teaches is it really uses golf as a vehicle to deliver these great values to youth. And that's what it did for me. You know, I'm really lucky. I have great parents that, you know, taught me well. But certainly the values that the first tee instilled in me are things that I take with me all the time, things that I apply during my professional golf career and certainly things that I'll apply to my next career going forward.
All right, Scott, as a lefty, we grew up in a world that Damon Hack does not understand. We couldn't get every golf club we hoped to get. Some just weren't available to us Southpaws. So I ask you, what was a golf club that you always wanted as a kid that you were never able to get? And I'll tell you mine, the Titleist PT Fairway Wood, you know, the little one that had the tiny sweet spot. That was always one I wanted lefty. Do you have a golf club that comes to mind?
You know what, Shane? We talked about this during the break, and you didn't mention that was your club, but it's so funny that, like, I would say that was kind of my club too. You know, I grew up watching Tiger Woods hit that thing on the nails, you know, the Open Championship at St. Andrews 2000, when he hits that 3-wood, you know, blind shot, he looks at Stevie and he's like, if that's the, you know, house that you want me to aim at, then I think that's perfect. We all know the shot I'm talking about. And, you know, that was the club I could, you know, granted back in 2000, maybe even now, I don't know if I'm good enough to hit that club. But yeah, that was a bummer. You know, you didn't get that one. But you know, the skill that I developed growing up was I could take a right-handed club in a pro shop, and I could visualize in my head what it would look like left-handed, and try and then go convince my parents to, you know, get it for me, which was tough. But sometimes it worked out.
Well, Scott, it's been so fun following your career. Congratulations on all you've accomplished, and best of luck in Chapter 2. As you call it, and don't be a stranger. We hope to speak to you soon.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on, and great chatting with you.
All right, that is Scott Langley from the First Tee.
Every lefty's got a club, I'm telling you.
Yeah, some righties have clubs this too, but a little easier for us to find the clubs we want. Tell you what, Taylor Gooch had the right clubs at the RSM Classic, the Oklahoma State Cowboy, with his first PGA Tour win. We discuss next on Golf Today. Think about the players who got their first win at the RSM Classic. I was there a couple years ago. It was Tyler Duncan, able to get it done in a playoff over Webb Simpson. Now Taylor Gooch joins that illustrious list. A PGA Tour winner can't be taken away from you. Final round 64. And afterwards, he talked about his journey.
You know, it's funny. It's like when this feels pressure, I just think back to I was playing TPC Craig Ranch, my third time of going through Q school in 2016. And I was in second stage at TPC Craig Ranch. I was on the number going to the third round, and I didn't have any more money. And I was three over through four, walking off the par three, and I thought to myself, I don't know why this came up, but Best Buy. It's like, I'm going to have to go work at Best Buy. I'm going to have to go do something to make a few bucks unless you, like, you know, get it together. And fortunately, I got it together, and I got through second stage. But I always fall back on Q school. You know, like I said, I was literally thinking, I'm going to have to go get a job, an actual job, and go make some money to, you know, pay for my traveling and all that the next year. And so that's to me in this game, that's the ultimate pressure. I always joke about with my friends when, you know, these guys are trying to win tournaments and everything, and there's all the pressure. And it's like, yeah, of course there's tons of pressure. There's tons of money. There's so much on the line, but it's just, I don't know, it's just different. Different when it's people are comfortable here. I was in survival mode then. Yes, I want to do well. I'm not in survival mode now like I was then. But I can reflect back on that and, you know that if I could do it when I was in survival mode, a little bit more comfort, it's not going to make it any more challenging.
Time now for Legends of the Fall. No Brad Pitt, no Anthony Hopkins, but we got Taylor Gooch. Look at what he's done in the fall. Won the RSM Classic, finished 11th or better in five of his six starts. He was 14 under par in five of his six events in this fall. Finished fall number one in the FedEx Cup standings, plus 47.4 strokes gained total, most of any player in span by more than 12 strokes. He had 10 rounds of 66 or lower.
And our buddies at PointsBet have been kind of chronicling his odds through the fall. You see where he was way back at the Fortinet Championship, plus 6,000 Napa.
He took notice.
Took notice, but look at the steady improvement. Worldwide Technology Championship at Mayakoba was plus 5,000, and Hewlett-Packard plus 3,300. RSM Classic plus 3,300. Everybody learning about the great quality of Taylor Gooch.
What a win for Mr. Gooch. We're going to talk a little bit more LPGA. We got to kind of wrap up the season. What we saw from Jin Young Ko, what we saw from Nelly, and Beth Ann Nichols joins the show. All that coming up.
It's the second hour of Golf Today. We dig into Jin Young Ko's season of success. Slow start, blazing hot finish, including on Sunday in Naples. We also break down the LPGA season as a whole. Yeah, that's a wrap. What we saw, what we learned, and yes, what is next on the LPGA Tour. And lucky number 17, some good bounces, some bad bounces, all the majesty and madness of this crazy game we all love. It's all ahead right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
It's Golf Today, second hour, Damon and Shane. And Damon, I have a household rule. That there's no, we don't do Christmas stuff before Thanksgiving.
Oh, 100%.
No, I don't know, decorations.
No decorations.
I don't need to do any of kind of the processes of Christmas. Okay. You can start Friday after Thanksgiving. Okay. We don't start before, but we do have to start wrapping up this LPGA season.
I think that's fair. We still got pumpkins around the house, in front of the house. We still got like colors like orange and brown,
it's fall.
And red rust. But yeah, the LPGA gave us a treat, I think, in 2021. The storylines, the quality of play. I think we're as too big of fans of the LPGA as anyone walking this big earth.
So we're breaking the rule. Okay. Get the wrapping paper out. Get the tape, get the scissors, and let's do it. Time to wrap up what was a great 2021 LPGA season.
All right, how about Jin Young Ko? Despite that lingering wrist injury, she capped off her already impressive season with her fifth win of the year at the CME Group Tour Championship with the trophy. She took home $1.5 million winner's prize and the Rolex Player of the Year.
And a rival throughout the season, Nelly Korda, fell short on Sunday. It was a 300 par 69, finished six off the lead of Jin Young Ko. Despite the loss on Sunday, it was still an incredible season for Nelly Korda. Four wins on the LPGA and then, of course, the gold medal at the Olympic Games. I call it five wins. I know statistically, if you will, it's four LPGA wins. She won five times around the world and five big events at that.
It was kind of the Jin Young Ko show today, and it was honestly really cool to see. She made everything, so it was just, I kind of sat back and watched all day.
Still a remarkable season overall, the four wins, gold medalist. What will you take away from this season overall?
That, you know, I can, if I set my mind to it, I can do anything, honestly. And I had a good year, and I'm just going to go back and kind of think about my year and kind of let it kind of soak in, which I'm super excited about, and get ready for next year.
From one major champ to another, it was Lydia Ko who finished the week in a tie for ninth and takes home the Vare Trophy for low stroke average. We talked about this redemptive year. You called it a necessary year. Yeah, she's always smiling and jumping around, and she had a lot of reason to this year. 36-hole leader in her season opener. The Gainbridge finished tied for second, close with that 62 at the Chevron, almost chasing down Patty Tabatanikin of UCLA. Won the Lotte by seven to break that three-year drought, lost the playoff at the Pelican, and won the Vare Trophy for the first time for the lowest season scoring average among eligible players, and talked about it after her round.
It's really special because obviously it sums up the whole season. You know, all the other things do too, but it, you know, at the end of the day, golf is about how consistently well you can play and what kind of low score you can shoot, and the Vare Trophy obviously exemplifies that. And I think I've only been close that one year that I just missed out on the trophy, and I didn't even know that I was close this year until news came out, and you know, I realized a couple months ago. So, you know, last week wasn't really on my schedule, but, you know, ended up being worth it because, you know, finishing tied second and to have won it, you know, is special. I feel like the whole, it just makes a good year, like, even better.
It was a great year. Way back in January, and we were just launching this show, one of your bold predictions was multiple majors for the quarters. You came very, very close, but it was still the quarter show for so much of 2021. And then Jin Young Ko closing like secretariat to catcher and passer at the tape. What's your biggest takeaway from this year that's been so competitive and so compelling?
We've had dominance from two players is my takeaway. I mean, there have been 30 events if you include the LPGA schedule and the Olympics, and these two players won 10 of them. I mean, you really think about that. When you really dive in to how limited we see in terms of dominance on the PGA Tour right now, how deep the PGA Tour is, it's so hard to win four and five times in a season. You have two players on the LPGA Tour separating themselves. And I said it off the top of this show. I mean, how much of a treat is this for women's golf and the LPGA to have an American superstar and another superstar from South Korea that are obsessed with the game of golf? You've got these two different personalities, both very much respecting each other's golf games. And then floating around are names like Lydia Ko and Lexi and so many great players, young players, Patty Tabatanica winning a major this season. There's just so much depth on the LPGA Tour, but there are two, really, to me, that have separated themselves at the great, great, great right now. And those are the two players that everybody else has got to find a way to go catch.
For as long as I've covered sports, Shane, I have been intrigued and fascinated by dynasties, whether it's players or teams, whether it's the Yankees or the Packers or the Lakers or Tiger, you name it. And when Annika Sorenstam was at the height of her power and she walked away and left, I felt a little bit of a hole in the heart. Same with Lorena Ochoa. You know, I wanted to see those players continue to be great. And they wanted to start families and do other things, and I completely respect that. But I now think that after this season we just saw on the LPGA, we may be on the brink of seeing two or three or perhaps more players who will ultimately end up in the World Golf Hall of Fame, ultimately end up in the LPGA Hall of Fame. Lydia Ko has 20 points needed for the 27 because of the Vare. How about Jin Young Ko with 17 points of the 27 necessary for the LPGA Hall of Fame? Historic year for Nelly. I love seeing the opportunity for players to double down on what they've accomplished. You had an incredible year. Can you make it an incredible career? Can you make it 5, 10, 15 years? I have so much respect for the athletes across the spectrum who do that. I think there's a great opportunity for these LPGA stars to do the same.
We throw finances around a lot in golf. We've had to talk sometimes about some of the money floating around for the PGA Tour players. It has been very cool to see some of these purses on the LPGA Tour continue to grow, because what that does is it expands and extends careers, right? Mm. Players wanting to play into their 30s and mid-30s and into their 40s. I mean, you look at these two young players that we've talked so much about. They're both so young, Dee. Yeah. They've got so much of career left in them. And when you look at winning a purse for $1.5 million and these purses continuing to grow in these major championships, the opportunity there to want to play for longer is going to be more open for some of these players that can check off so much at such a young age. So again, this is the first step to me in what we're going to see the LPGA Tour look like over the next 5 and 10 years. And it's very, very exciting to see. And for more on this, of course, we welcome in Beth Ann Nichols, who follows the LPGA as closely as anyone. Read Beth Ann all the time. Beth Ann, when is the last time to you the LPGA has felt like there were two players this much above the rest?
Well, you know, interestingly, it's not all that long ago. 2016, we had Lydia and Aria Jutanugarn winning 4 and 5 times respectively on, actually it was Aria who won 5 times and ultimately won Player of the Year, but they both won major championships. They both had these spectacular seasons, but it just kind of fizzled after that, right? We thought maybe something was going to grow here, these two prodigies, and it didn't. And so to your point, Damon, it'll be interesting to see if these two can continue this run. And right now we see no reason to believe that they can. And Jin-Young Ko has only been at this since 2018 and has only astonishingly missed 2 cuts in that entire time. She has as many major titles as she does missed cuts. So it's been just a spectacular season for both. And it felt like, you know, the tale of two seasons, and that the first half of the year belonged to Nelly Korda and the second half to Jin-Young Ko. But it was so fantastic in that in this final event, it all culminated in a head-to-head shootout for everything. And the LPGA and golf fans couldn't have asked for anything more.
Beth Ann, you used the word run, and it has been a spectacular run for both players. But is this run a rivalry? Why or why not?
I think it is now. I think what we saw transpire over the weekend, you know, I don't know that you're ever going to hear any jabs between these two players or anyone on the LPGA for that matter. But the fact that these two, as you say, seem to be in another gear, on another level than the rest of the tour right now, week in and week out, it is a rivalry. And I'm think they're pushing each other as hard as they can. And they have very different games, different ways of going about their business. But, you know, they offer something for everyone, I think. And we've been waiting for an American star to vie for number one in the world, to become number one in the world. And then, as you say, you know, we've seen so much Asian dominance over recent years. Everyone was clamoring for the USA versus South Korea showdown at the International Crown. And we got it. And now it feels like we could have something like that, you know, week in and week out, which is really exciting.
Beth Ann, in your opinion, who is the most likely player to kind of join these two as a third wheel in 2022?
Gosh, didn't it feel like Patty Tavatanikit was destined to win again this year, and she didn't? I mean, it felt like she was going to win a major title. I was just waiting for that moment, because I feel like she's that kind of player that loves to rise to the occasion and constantly is looking within herself to see how she can get better. And I think having Grant Wade on her side, her swing coach, former PGA Tour winner, who knows what it takes and what it's like to be in that winner's circle and really dissect, you know, what's going on as her caddy from time to time inside the ropes. I really feel like she has so much potential, so much length, so much explosiveness that I'm excited to see her get into that mix next year even more.
Speaking of rising, how about the rising purses that we're going to see at the CME Group Tour Championship? A new sponsor in Chevron, increased purses at the majors. When was the last time you saw the LPGA in this state of strength?
I can't think of one in my time covering the tour. You know, I definitely think that the major championships are pushing each other. I fully expect the U.S. Women's Open, the USGA to respond as the bar keeps raising. I think we're going to see something from them down the road. You know, I just think the $7 million purse is significant in that it's not just $2 million to the winner next year for CME, but it's $40,000 to who finishes last in 60th place. And that's very significant. This year it was 11,000 and change. So for these players, that, you know, top to bottom, that's extraordinarily important. And you know, one of my favorite moments this year was Ryan O'Toole winning for the first time. She'd been playing for 11 years on the LPGA, 200 and some odd starts before she had her first win. And I was talking to her last week at the Pelican about that. And Ryan wants to start a family. And the fact that she didn't know if she wanted to combine playing on the tour and raising a family, but winning that tournament gives her a lot of job security. And I think we kind of maybe underestimate the importance of job security on the LPGA financially in terms of having status. And so that win was really special for her, not to just know that she could do it, but to say, hey, you know, I can start a family and feel secure and in this. And I've heard that from a number of players over the years who've cashed big checks or had big moments and said, okay, now's the time.
Beth Ann, where does 2021 rank for you personally in your time covering the LPGA Tour?
I think it was, I don't know where it ranks in terms of a number, but it was very meaningful in terms of all of these huge events. You know, we had the Olympics with Nelly Korda getting gold medal. We had a fantastic Solheim Cup that broke every record that you can imagine on property in terms of merchandise sold and the amount of people that were there. So, you know, and of course all the majors going to the Olympic Club for the first time for the U.S. Women's Open and that fantastic and riveting finish. You know, there were just so many big moments that we can look at, and the bookends between the Tournament of Champions with Jessica shooting 60 and then that fantastic shootout between the Korda sisters and Danielle Kang all the way to the finish at CME. You couldn't have asked for anything better down the stretch there on Sunday. I just think it was a fantastic season overall for the LPGA, but the announcements of what's to come in terms of venues and purses is probably the most exciting thing.
Well, with all those big stops that you mentioned, you came on this show and made this program a lot better with your nuggets in reporting. Beth Ann, thanks so much for your time, all your contributions to Golf Week, and, of course, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Back on Golf Today, after winning 3 New Jersey State Championships and securing a golf scholarship to college, Dennis Walters was involved in a tragic golf cart accident which left him paralyzed from the waist down. He has spent his life making the most of his situation, becoming a trick shot artist. Walters was inducted in the World Golf Hall of Fame in 2019. And tonight at 8 Eastern, Golf Films presents Get a New Dream, the Dennis Walters film.
Look at Dennis's career accomplishments. Won the 1967 New Jersey Junior Caddy and Public Links Championships. Legendary trick shot artist, despite being paralyzed from the waist down at the age of 24, won USGA's Bob Jones Award in 2018 and inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in 2019. And Dennis joins us now. Dennis, I was reading an article about your life, and you lost your ability to walk at the age of 24, and you said to yourself, I realized I wasn't getting any better, so I should try to make the best out of it. How were you able to buy into that mindset at such a young age?
Well, first of all, thanks for having us on. The first thing I encountered was I was in this hospital bed that you'll see in the movie tonight. That was very strange. It was like a Ferris wheel, and I figured I was never getting out of that bed. But I did get out of that bed, and I promised myself I was not going to quit, and I was not going to give up, and I was going to try to do something. Because when I was laying in that bed for 4 months, I figured I'd never be able to accomplish anything. And for me, accomplishing something meant trying to figure out a way, starting from scratch, to figure out how to play golf. Because everybody said, too bad, Dennis, you'll never play golf again because you can't stand up. And they were absolutely correct. So I started hitting golf balls sitting down.
And you've made millions laugh and smile with what you've been able to do, Dennis. But what's it like having a film made about your life?
I think it's pretty cool. I wrote a book. I got a D in English and wrote a book. And I think this is really cool. We had a very talented team. And Tim McEnany was the guy that had the idea to do it. And Alec Vigneault was the one that put this all together. And I think it's extremely well done by some very talented people, and I'm very grateful for having the opportunity to show it to people, because I've been traveling the world for the last 44 years. I've made over 3,000 performances, and each one I've tried to encourage others to reach for their dreams, strive for excellence, and to do something positive in their life that they didn't think they could. And I'm doing this by telling them my own story. And I'm hoping also to be able to reach other people through this film, Get a New Dream. And that's really a big part of what I say. Because if you have a dream and it doesn't work out, that's okay. Because the solution is simple. Get a new dream. And that's what I did. And that's what I've tried to encourage others to do, all the while hitting great golf shots, telling bad jokes, and delivering this uplifting universal message.
Well, it's a powerful message at that. You've inspired countless. Who inspired you, if anyone, to keep at it?
That would be my dad. I had been in the hospital for 4 months, and I went to rehab for 4 months, and I was laying on the couch watching the 1975 Bing Crosby tournament. A lot of my friends were playing in it. I had gotten to the finals at Q School after playing in college golf for 4 years at North Texas State. And I was crying my eyes out because I felt like I should have been there too. And he goes, "Come on, champ, let's go hit some golf balls." And I said, "Well, how do you reckon I'm going to do that?" And he goes, "Out of your blanking wheelchair." And that was kind of the start of it. And my dad went with me on the road for 17 years and was a tremendous influence in my life, as well as my mom and my sister, Barbara, who continues to be a huge help to me all these years.
Dennis, what's been the toughest trick shot that you've pulled off, something that took countless hours, days, weeks, even months to perfect?
Well, if it took that long, it's probably sitting in my garage, never made it to the show. But it's funny, the trick shots rotate. There's always one that gives me a problem, and then I cure that one, and another one turns up. But I really like hitting through fire, and I like hitting my machine gun shot, which is I hit golf balls while I roll. And I'm watching these films. You guys don't have any new films. These things are really old, but they're really cool because I wish I could swing like that today.
Well, think about all the miles you've traveled. You've been all over the world. Over all these years, where's been your favorite place to do a trick shot, a course, or an event that you think about to this day?
Oh, man, I'm so glad you asked me that question. This is the easiest question anyone could ever ask me. Off the first tee at St. Andrews and off the first tee at Augusta National. And, man, I think about those days all the time. It was just absolutely the best. When I went to Augusta National and found out my show was going to be off the first tee, I said, "I'm really stiff today. I got to hit a few extra shots." So I hit about 100 balls off the first tee at Augusta National between warm-ups and the show. So that's like making a cut in 25 Masters.
Well, Dennis, we really appreciate you taking some time to join us. Get a New Dream, the Dennis Walters film, tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern on Golf. Everybody watch it, DVR it.